Wendy's new Biggie Deals lets you choose whatever you're in the mood for. It's like a music mixing board of deals, and you're the producer. Go with some chill folk music with a JBC in the $4 Biggie Bite snack. Try the drum and bass of deals with a double stack in the $6 Biggie Bag. Or go full-on sandwich symphony with an $8 Biggie Bundle, the grand finale of snacking. And the best part? They all come with napkins! $4, $6, and $8 Biggie Deals how you want them. At Wendy's.
Price and participation may vary. Single items at regular price. Prices may be higher in Alaska, California, and Hawaii.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Fiscally responsible, financial geniuses, monetary magicians. These are things people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds. Because Progressive offers discounts for paying in full, owning a home, and more. Plus, you can count on their great customer service to help you when you need it, so your dollar goes a long way. Visit Progressive.com to see if you could save on car insurance. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states or situations.
Astonishing Legends Network.
The following is intended for bizarre audiences only. Welcome to the Midnight Library.
Mr. Darling, I have a surprise for you.
Does it squeak? Can I chase it?
Well, no. It doesn't do anything but give sacred information. I've had both of our DNA tested.
But how did you get a sample from me?
Darling, you shave 3 times a day and shed 4 times a year.
It still seems sneaky, but point taken.
Good evening. You go right ahead and follow Mr. Darling into the reading room. Please, my guests, go on. I'll catch up, I promise.
Number 12!
Goon number 12. Mind Mr. Thompson, please. There he goes. Right there. He's headed into the parlor door. Mind him a little less, please, number 12. There we go. Very good. Thank you, number 12. Thank you. This way, Mr. Thompson. This way. After you. Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Midnight Library. I am your maritime maven, Miranda Merrick, and I am so pleased to have you here. I would like to remind you how welcome and valued you truly are here in the Midnight Library. Honestly, we love you and think the world of you. No matter who you are, what you believe, or where you're from. Why, it's almost as though you are the lifeblood of this place. Now, as you are settling in, my dear guest, I want to explain this evening's offerings on the hospitality tray. I guess the foremost thing you should know is that the Evil Witches Yacht Club is hosting the bountiful bites that are available on the tray and freely given to you this night. The industrious ladies from the exclusive seafaring group insisted that if we would permit them to serve you their yummy spread of deep-sea delights, that we would also agree to have them as sponsors of tonight's frightful reading on haunted Australian lighthouses. And yes, I know that that sounds like a warped bargain. But trust me, refusing the ladies of the Evil Witches Yacht Club is also not smart bargaining either. So, the little printed menu I have here states that the nautical nibbles they have provided are authentic fisherman's stew, made with bloated blobfish and a sea cucumber side salad. Next, we have pickled black teat fish. It's a real thing, look it up. They've also made a large platter of spaghetti eel. That's the wiggly mound thing. There's finely ground hagfish on the half shell, which they claim is a specialty of theirs. And bloody belly comb jellies, served on powdery gray ship's biscuits. And as a sweet treat, they've sent warty sea slugs with extra slime, served over vanilla ice cream. What's this? Oh, there's a wee asterisk here and fine print saying that, that the authentic fisherman's stew may contain trace amounts of authentic fisherman. So, bear that in mind and please enjoy. And, of course, thank you so much, Evil Witches Yacht Club. Call me a dreamer, my lovely guest, but I like to believe that you are as much in love with the sea, tall ships, the salty shore, and spooky nautical lore as much as I am, which is quite a lot. So when a new friend of the Midnight Library, Charlotte from the land down under, being Australia, not Hades, Charlotte sent us a collection of writings about their haunted lighthouses. Well, I was instantly hooked and pulled down into the depths of these lonely outposts and their troubled histories. My very next thought was how very much I wanted to share their possessed personnel with you. I can hardly wait. Briefly, lighthouses have been dotted along the shores of the Earth's coasts, dutifully protecting sailing ships for literally thousands of years. The first one, the prototype for all the others that followed, was built on the island of Pharos, near Egypt, and was named Pharos of Alexandria. It was built more than 2,300 years ago by Ptolemy I and his son, Ptolemy II. It stood a miraculous 450 feet tall and burned brilliantly by the power of a massive hungry furnace at night and by the reflected sunlight that bounced off the surface of a highly polished mirror during the day. The light that shone from this house could be seen for many, many miles out to sea, and it stood in service for over 1,500 years, until it was sadly shaken to rubble little by little by a series of brutal earthquakes. with its final dramatic collapse happening in the early 1300s. In more modern times, the great island nation of Australia has so many lighthouses that I can only provide you with an estimate of their number, which is roughly between 350 and 400 lighthouses. Many of these historical and beloved dwellings are firmly believed to be haunted. Let us begin. And as I'm sure you know, my lovelies, for as long as there have been lighthouses, there have been lighthouse keepers. Ah, now these are some fearsome, fiery fellows for sure, because lighthouse keeping is not something that can or could be done by the average Joe, or Josephine for that matter, as there have been several lighthouse keeping ladies over the centuries as well. And they are all cut from different timber than your average folk. That's for certain. These rugged souls are or were sturdy individualists, although they were at times set up to maintain their precious lighthouses with others of similar staunch dispositions. And when I say staunch and rugged, I mean it. These men and women were ferried out to their distant stations, some on remote rocky land masses, and some parked on an otherwise uninhabitable craggy island that jutted up out of the sea, and left there for months at a time. Some even brought their families. They ate, slept, and breathed their sole purpose to keep that bloody light lit. Everything else came second, and often at the expense of the entirety of their well-being, most commonly their sanity. Oh, but they were tough. In short, these were not the sort of people who were the type to moan. Oh, I can't. There's not enough room for my D&D orc collection. And if I run out of lip liner, I'm going to need to be rescued and taken directly to the mall. None of that for these folks. They were deposited mostly by boat at their remote lighthouse, where they subsisted for months at a time with only a few changes of clothing, dried foods such as rice, corn, and beans, fresh foods that could be stored like onions and potatoes, and before canned foods came about, any meats such as beef and pork were packed or encased in a thick crust of salt to keep them from rotting. Although fresh fish could be caught, of course. Their bread, for the most part, was in the form of those hardtack biscuits. So if they split a tooth, well, they just dealt with it. They were also in possession of modest tools and housewares, cast iron pots and pans, rags and barrels, which is how they collected their drinking water. Oh, and they had their mandatory and precious log books. Could you live like this, my lovely? Some of you are nodding. I could, but as Bartleby the Scrivener famously said, I would prefer not to. This life of dogged isolation took its toll on many a keeper and their loved ones, with some coming to mysterious and eerie endings. Many believe their mad or tortured spirits then became part of the lonely structures they inhabited. And I am inclined to believe it. The Girl in the Bathtub, The Haunting of South Solitary Island Lighthouse. It's as if the name and location of this forlorn lighthouse off the coast of New South Wales ensured that it would be an outbound and troubled place from the beginning. Constructed in 1879 on the stony stretch of land jutting up from the Pacific mid-north coast, the pure white lighthouse and its small group of companion buildings stands all alone, facing the shore it has dutifully protected for all of this time. It is said to be so remote that, and I quote, "The isolation of this station is well borne out by the visitor's book, which from the date of the opening to the present time has entries on 20 pages only." In 1912, the towering 20-meter or roughly 60 feet tall lighthouse was set to be maintained by the Gow family, being David Gow, his wife, Sarah Rose Gow, and their teenage daughter, Lydia. It is thought that somehow, amongst their packed-up belongings and foods that were delivered to sustain them on the remote massive boulder, was contained therein the dangerous contaminant or germ of the deadly disease, typhoid. And young Lydia fell ill, running a blistering fever. Her distressed father called for a doctor, but a raging storm that hampered all travel along the coast set in. By the time the good doctor had arrived, several days later, Lydia was already dead. She was just 17. Making her devastating death worse was the fact that she couldn't be buried, nor could her body have been transported because of the violent storms. You see, the island upon which the lighthouse stands is a solid whole chunk of stone, impossible to dig. There was literally no depth of topsoil to set the poor girl's remains down into. And brokenheartedly repulsed by the idea of throwing their dead daughter into the sea, her poor parents did the only thing that they could think of. They lifted their deceased girl into a bathtub and submerged her in concrete, then covered it over with a second bathtub and welded the two tubs together, entombing her body inside. 4 long days later, Lydia was transported to Newcastle for burial, reportedly still inside of the 2 soldered tubs. Her parents never once returned to the lighthouse, but it is very much believed that Lydia never left. Ever since her tragic death happened, strange and unsettling occurrences have been continually reported at the lighthouse. New keepers that took over and those who took over from them in years later have all reported a dire and dreary feeling that hangs about in the air of the place. Footsteps echoing in the spiraling staircases, many stating that they felt another presence while they were entirely alone on the island, with some telling of feeling a definite female presence right beside them as they worked or read. Some reported the very real touch of fingers passing through their hair as they were stirred awake from a sound sleep. One of the most convincing cases was that of 9-year-old Darren Squibb, who moved to the lighthouse with his parents as keepers in 1979. Young Darren recalled that sitting alone upon the boxes when they first arrived, that there was something odd about the house. He later stated that there was always a presence in his room, and that he clearly saw a shadowy kind of flowing light that moved up into the corner of the room that terrified him. It was only years later that his parents admitted that they, too, were experiencing these happenings, along with tappings in the night, furniture being tipped and weirdly positioned, and even Darren's father finally confessing that he had seen the ghostly form of the doomed young woman making its way across the property in the night. In modern times, those who maintain the automatic lighthouse report that the place is still off, and that pictures are known to just fall off the wall, but that it's always only Lydia's.
Go on, tell them!
Yes, I'm telling them right now. Tonight's reading, In the Midnight Library, is proudly brought to you by the Evil Witches Yacht Club. Just let me scan this real quick here. It's a charity event. How kind. The Evil Witches Yacht Club is sponsoring the repainting of our very own lighthouse, the affectionately named Apparition Point. And they are sorely in need of volunteers. Yes, it's that time of the century again, when the entire 90-foot structure needs a refresh. As you probably know, the unique, sanguinish red color of the paint is manufactured somewhere here in the village at an undisclosed location. We don't want silly Sherwin Williams to swipe our secret paint formula. The ladies remind you that volunteering to help to paint the lighthouse is not without its rewards, I'm pleased to say. Especially if you're one who pines away for the good old days. Because the very same field grass ropes and horsehair harnesses that were used centuries ago will be provided to you for your use now. The ladies say that you will need to bring your own brushes, though. Please feel free to sign up on the roster by the door as you depart this evening. Oh, and on a completely unrelated note, there happens to be a blood drive all this month at the Broom and Fang Pub. I will just say that it seems far better to donate your blood willingly rather than to have it forcibly taken from you. Oh, you may also sign up with Dolly at the Dockhouse on any given Sunday. Thank you, Evil Witches Yacht Club. Well, let us go from bad to worse, shall we? This gets grim, my lovelies, so buckle up. Maybe, just maybe, the problem started small. It seems like their intentions were good, though, mostly. Bustard Head Lighthouse, that's been operating since 1868 and dutifully saving lives for all of this time, was built on the like-named headland of Bustard Head, which was named as such by Captain James Cook. Yes, that one, the famous explorer. Cook and his landing party decided to name the protrusion of mostly barren land at the time after the plump bustard bird they had shot and eaten on the newly founded grounds. So that's the start. The pure white tower with its signature red domed topper stands nearly 60 feet tall. And although appearing as a steadfast symbol of safety and serenity, it has been the scene of accidents, suicides, shipwrecks, fires, drownings, and murders. And thereafter, countless strange happenings. And it has its very own graveyard. To further impress upon you the earned nature of Bustard Head Lighthouse, I will tell you that it has commonly become nicknamed and well known as both the Lighthouse of Tragedy and the Lighthouse of Horror. Where to begin? Before the lighthouse was even completed, a workman was killed by being struck on the head by a massive steel beam while working on the structure in 1868. But it seems the safe and steady atmosphere of the lighthouse all began to shift with a missing person. In 1887, on a cool May evening, Kate Gibson, the wife of the assistant keeper, Nils Gibson, went missing. For 2 days, the stationed staff and their family members searched the rough terrain and surrounding woods for Kate. She was later discovered on the grounds by her own daughter. Kate was weirdly propped up against a tree, and her throat had been slit. And quite upsettingly, the investigation and inquest ruled her death to be a suicide. Kate was then immediately buried on the property. But she wouldn't be the only one. A mere 2 years later, in 1889, tragedy revisited the Gibson family when Nils, his adult daughter Mary, John Wilkinson and his wife Elizabeth, and the telegraph master, Alfred Power, all set sail from Bustard Head on a calm day. For unknown reasons, their boat capsized, and three were drowned. Nils the keeper and John Wilkinson, the assistant, made it back to shore. Mrs. Wilkinson, Mr. Power, and Nils' daughter Mary all drowned. Mary's body was never found. These grievous happenings took such a toll on Nils Gibson that he began drinking. He drank so much that his liver failed, and he was buried next to his wife in the growing cemetery. In February of 1912, a kind of messy love triangle turned mystery played out on the grounds of Bustard Head. 17-year-old Edie Anderson, the daughter of the then-keeper, Mr. Anderson, was headed back to the lighthouse on horseback. She was accompanied by Arthur Cogswell. The traveling couple was accosted, and Cogswell was shot in the stomach. Young Edie was abducted. With his dying breath, Cogswell stated that their assailant was a man named George Daniels, whom it was believed was either in a relationship with young Edie or just consumed by the idea of possessing her. And he had taken her into the bush, or the rough and forbidden scrublands of the surrounding area. An extensive manhunt was launched, but the missing two, George Daniels and Edie Anderson, weren't discovered until a full 23 years later. Their completely decomposed remains were curiously found after all that time, lying side by side on the open ground. Now, I needn't convince you, my lovely and clever guest, that once you combine all of these happenings plus a further mix of bad accidents, a disastrous fire, a child's death, and many more drownings surrounding the lighthouse, that what you will inevitably get is a thoroughly haunted lighthouse. So what goes on, I hear you ask? Well, visitors, researchers, and workers have all reported hearing echoing footsteps traveling the spiral staircases inside the lighthouse. Those stationed overnight often hear singing or whispering voices. Some swear they hear the sound of a child or children giggling. Inside doors often just randomly swing open or close abruptly. Rattles and stirrings in the kitchens seem to happen when it's completely unoccupied. And a being dubbed the Lonely Figure has been seen in his old-timey clothing, dawdling around on the craggy rocks below the lighthouse. This is firmly believed to be the ghost of Robert Christofferson, a keeper who vanished without a trace in 1947. A signature lady in white has also been seen, softly fading into the walls and drifting through the tiny cemetery. And of course, no haunting is complete without that certain unnameable something, with workmen and visitors frustratingly stating that they were sure they weren't alone, that someone was watching them, and that a real eerie or disturbing presence was all around them. Shadows sliding across the walls, voices resonating from nearby rooms and the like. The locals all say, if you want to encounter bad juju, Bustard Head is the place to visit. which you can, by the way. The lighthouse can be reached by boat and by road. I've heard the tour guides will be happy to leave you alone for a bit in the historic old rooms. Or you can respectfully traipse through the 9 graves in the graveyard. Several of the graves are alarmingly small, and a few are unmarked. Just like on the grounds here. Just a few more words on the nature of unmarked graves. We have several books here, and one instruction manual regarding the subject of unmarked graves. These graves can be graves that are noted only by a large unassuming stone, a stick-style cross, or an intentionally blank or sanded smooth flat slab. This is said to rob the dead of their name and identity, or in more extreme covert instances, a grave can be totally unmarked and invisible to you, so you have no idea that you are trespassing by standing on or walking over it. And by doing so, you deeply disrespect, disturb, and encourage the attention of the earthbound spirit below. The maniacal, unrested soul is then believed to attach themselves to the living intruder, harassing and haunting them, turning their luck sour and nibbling away at their sanity. It is believed that an intentionally unmarked grave is what tethers the soul to the earth in the first place. Erasing their name prevents them from going toward the light in the afterlife, and causes them to be particularly restless and vengeful in their attitude towards the living. Which sounds logical to me. So, the more you know, right? Don't forget to sign up to volunteer to paint the lighthouse on your way out, my dear guest. And maybe be aware, you know, of the slightly sunken spots on the grounds as you make your way safely back. Good night, my dear guests. Good night. Okay, darling. To show good faith, I'll read your DNA results and you can read mine. Here we go. You are 80% shapeshifter werewolf, 18% English gentleman, and 2% chihuahua.
What? Let me see that.
Nope. No arguing. You are what you are.
Alrighty then. You, Miss Precious, you are 70% forest witch, 20% sea witch, no my, 10% chupacabra.
You let me see that.
Nope. You are what you are.
Oh! Now, a small personal note about lighthouses. If you really love lighthouses like I do, spooky lovelies, I thought you might like to know about the amazing YouTube series from Project Lighthouse. A father and son team Rich and Thomas Couche have purchased 3 abandoned lighthouses in the Chesapeake Bay and are lovingly and painstakingly restoring them. All 3 lighthouses will be restored and upgraded, transforming them into shining beacons that will serve as learning centers for visitors and workstations for those caring for the bay's wildlife and environment. These heroic men are saving Hooper Island Lighthouse, the Craig Hill Channel Lighthouse, and my favorite, Wolf Trap Lighthouse. I'm proud to support their glorious efforts. And no, they're not a sponsor. I just really love lighthouses. If you would like to watch them in action or even support the project, look for Project Lighthouse on YouTube and Instagram. Thank you. This message is for you, my dear guest. It's important to me that you know that you are welcome and valued here. Why? Because I know that you are a real person. And I'd like you to know that in spite of what you may hear in the village, that I am a real person too. I am not an AI-generated thing, pieced together by robbing the work of others and presented by a soulless algorithm, meant to spew a random flood of content at you that only masquerades as quality entertainment. I choose the subjects I think you'll like. I diligently research the topics using only reputable books and sites. I alone write every single word you hear. I choose each piece of music and every eerie fun sound. I am the Midnight Library. I am the Reading Room. I am every character. I am the Broom and Fang Pub, the fog that floats in the graveyard, and every Lady Gravedigger, and I am honored that you enjoy what I create. So I will ask you to support the Midnight Library, as many of my beloved friends do. Please visit patreon.com/midnightlibrary, and I'll meet you there. Thank you.